San Francisco, all over the world, all joining in. Come through, Harry. And Houdini, Colonel Harry Day, member of the British Parliament, has formed a circle in London, England. Colonel Day was your closest boyhood friend. Houdini, you must come through. And at the bottom of the world, Australia, the country where you made history, has joined in. We are crying to high heaven, to the powers that be. We are crying in one mighty magnetic voice from every corner of the earth, and the hearts and minds of the multitudes are centered here tonight. We want the evidence, the truth, in the name of humanity and love. If there is communication from the great beyond, come through with the audience.
And followed calm and silent meditation. And again, intense and dramatic soul pleading, in which Mrs. Houdini joined Dr. Saint. But no sign of Houdini. Spirit Land did not send a single emissary. At last, Dr. Saint, in a voice that broke, asked,
Mrs. Houdini, the 0 hour has passed. The 10 years are up. Have you reached a decision?
Yes. Houdini did not come through. My last hope is gone. I do not believe that Houdini can come back to me or to anyone. After faithfully following through the 10-year Houdini compact, using every type, medium, and seance, it is now my personal and positive belief that spirit communication in any form is impossible. I do not believe that ghosts or spirits exist. The Houdini shrine has burned for 10 years. I now reverently turn out the light. It is finished. Good night, Harry.
Wow. I've heard that tape so many times, and I still get goosebumps every single time. And I can't believe it's been 80 years. And if you are tuning in for the Inner Side with Scooter and Stacy, they will not be on tonight, but they will be back next week. But don't you dare go away, because we have a much more magic to bring you tonight. And let me also say, Harry Houdini, if you are out there and if you are listening to us, you are more than welcome to join us in the studio. Robbie, what do you think when you listen to this?
You know, I think that's really the reason why you know Harry Houdini's name instead of Howard Thurston. Howard Thurston at the time was a much more sort of mainstream, predominant performer and magician. But Harry Houdini had effectively a PR team working for him for 30 years after he died.
Well, I'm telling you, I still get goosebumps when I hear this.
Oh, there's a lot of mysticism and theatricality built up around Houdini, and I think that's what sort of has built up the image and kind of cultivated in the, I think it was 1952 movie with Tony Curtis and Jamie Lee.
Right.
That, you know, just rocketed him into, you know, cemented him really into popular culture. And what's funny is I actually got to spend some time with Houdini's niece, who was the last living person to know him. And she would talk about how his wife, Bess, and his manager, Martin Beck, would beg him before and after every show to take the magic out because it was so bad.
Because his fame came from being an escape artist.
Yes,
is that true?
The big escapes, the big stunts, that's what he was known for, and he would make people sit through the magic. And there's Jim Steinmeier, who's a probably the greatest illusion builder and designer to ever live. He's also a magic historian, and he writes an anecdote about how Harry Houdini made an elephant disappear in the round in a baseball stadium. Baseball field, saying that wrong, and it didn't get a reaction. It was an illusion that would be astonishing to magicians today, because his performance was so bad, the audience just wanted the baseball game to continue.
Oh, wow. But, you know, there's a lot to be said for the PR and the magic of magic.
The Kardashian of magic.
Well, maybe so, you know, but this seance was 10 years after he died, and 80 years after that,
yeah.
We're still sitting here kind of mesmerized,
we are,
if I may use that term. And, you know, Harry Houdini's career maybe because of his PR team, did take him around the world, and he performed for royalty. He performed on every corner of the globe. And I got to say, it reminds me of a magician I know by the name of Robbie Bennett,
who's
performed all over the world.
God, that guy's such a fraud.
No, I don't think so. But would you tell us your second story?
Absolutely. So in 2011, I was fortunate enough, my buddy was running a children's village in Uganda and was going over there for the presidential elections. And I asked him if I could tag along. So we went to Uganda. I spent about 3 weeks there total. I make the joke, too, that I spent 3 weeks in Uganda because I have a bad travel agent. The whole trip was like $60. No, but we went over there during the presidential elections to see how things were running with the children's village he had helped establish. And Winston Churchill called Uganda the Pearl of Africa, and it still holds true to this day. It was the first time, though, that I'd been on an international flight, got off at the airport, and had to walk out on a staircase onto the tarmac. Usually on international flights, it's a ride into the terminal, but when you walk in, everything is Coca-Cola. They love Coca-Cola there because it's the one company that did not pull out during wartime.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and to get your visa into the country, it's not a questionnaire. They don't try to check your background or what you're doing there. It is $50 American to get into the country. So we get there. And funny enough, Uganda was actually the original piece of property offered to the Jews for the Israeli settlement. Yeah, they turned it down. And it's kind of ironic after the Entebbe massacre of the Jews there. And we were there, and I was asked to do, not planned, I did a television appearance on three television stations in Uganda. Not very impressive because no one owns a television in Uganda. But it was one of the only times I was performing for international diplomats who were there for the election. One of only two times in my career that I have been searched and scanned with a metal detector before I'm allowed into the venue.
It's got to be tough for a magician.
I mean, it's not exactly what you want to do right before you go and perform. But the people there had no really preconceived notion as to what it was I was doing. There was no registry in their mind for what the magic was. And a lot of them didn't know how to react. They didn't think it was real, as I don't let people think that. But they didn't know if it was just entertainment. There was literally no register for what I was doing. And it was a really unique experience. We got to see the richest of the rich, the poorest of the poor. And what was really amazing there, and seeing it and sort of comparing it to the culture, is realizing that people are exactly the same. And they hadn't lost a lot of their humanity. It seemed like the priorities were still very much in check. We were even escorted around in presidential vehicles, and still it was a culture shock to see the differences, but the people were all still the same. And during the elections, too, what I thought was really interesting was that there were UN auditors at every polling booth. Which I'm still kind of wondering, especially now during this presidential election, it's like, are we really above that? So that was really interesting to see. I'm not sure why those aren't sent to more places around the world. And it was funny, the kids there actually, they tried to wipe the white off of me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they had never seen a white person before and were trying to see if it would come off.
How did the kids react to your magic?
The kids were astounded. They had to pretty much be told to react.
Um, So the kids had never seen magic, and the parents had never seen. So how did you get involved in an official capacity? It seems like you went there just kind of on your own.
We did. We kind of made a friend, though, and he took us to the country club there in Kampala. And sort of the reaction people gave me when they found out what I did gave us a lead into sort of these diplomatic avenues, connections to the president's office, and they asked me to perform at a golf tournament that they had there.
Wow. And so what happened then?
Then I found out that it was going to be televised all over the country. Became friends with the lieutenant general of the military, arms dealers from South Korea. It was a pretty interesting trip. My mom was wondering before we went if they had to get kidnapping insurance, but it was nothing like
that. And what year was that?
That was 2011. So Museveni, I think he's still in office, but had been in office since, I believe, 87.
So tell me a little more about what you're doing now when it comes to both your charity work, which, you know, is of interest to me, and with your shows, because I know you have two shows coming up just before Christmas in Houston.
So on the charity side, I'm just, I'm really, you know, it got really difficult, you know, seeing kids pass away, things like that. So right now I'm trying to, there are several organizations that I work with just in their programming and things like that. I make occasional trips to different hospitals and try to do some fundraising for them as well. What we got going on right now is on Thanksgiving Eve, we have Andy Huggins, who's sort of a comedy legend here on the Houston scene. He wrote for Jay Leno, Billy Crystal, the Academy Awards.
Well, wasn't he part of the Bill Hicks crowd?
Yeah, he was Bill Hicks' like best friend and road buddy. So,
and friends, if you don't know Bill Hicks, he was a brilliant comedian from Houston, who, unfortunately, shortly after his first HBO special, developed brain cancer and passed away, I believe, at 33 years old.
32.
32 years old.
Yeah, I mean, he was way ahead of his time, and we lost him way too soon.
Well, what's also strange is in his last CD, he makes a lot of fun of cancer and people who are dying, but no one knew until afterwards that he knew he was dying when he was doing all
that. Yeah, and I mean, David Letterman even, God, I think 10 years later, brought his mom on and apologized for pulling one of the segments that he had recorded.
And she still didn't appreciate it.
But then they aired the segment. And, yeah, no, he was a comedic genius. I can't believe the body of work that he had, you know, when he was just 32 years old. But one of his good friends, who now is like the godfather and mentor to a lot of local and international comedians, were putting him at a joke joint comedy club Thanksgiving Eve. People can come out and see him there.
Wow. Wow. And then you have some shows coming up at the Match Theater?
Match, yeah. The new Midtown Arts and Theater Center, Houston. That is a new gem in this city.
And friends, if you have not been in to see this theater, you need to get down there. And
yeah.
I recommend you go see Robbie's show, but anything going on at the Match, you're going to really enjoy that special space that's been created.
Yeah, it's a brand...
Four theaters in one?
Yeah, brand new theater complex with four venues in it. And everybody needs to know about this place. It's a lot of local entertainment, it's a lot of smaller traveling shows, but it's all fantastic.
Well, and I know some of your shows are G-rated, some are PG, yeah, some are R-rated.
Yeah.
So what can people expect when they come?
This one, the thing I can equate it to is like Shrek. There's going to be things for the adults, stuff for everybody, things for the kids, but it's our Christmas show. We're doing it December 23rd and 24th at Match. Tickets are $20. Magic, snow, monkeys.
Magic, so, snow, and monkeys?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that is just amazing. And how many seats are in the venue?
This one is 333, I believe.
333.
Yeah.
You know, and that is an intimate way to see magic because, you know, it's not something you're ever going to want to see at a giant stadium because, you know, half of the fun of magic is trying to catch you doing the things you do.
You'll be really close.
I've never been able to before. You know, I'm like, okay, I've seen this trick five
times.
Well,
I mean, I was sick for a long time, so I had a lot of practice.
Yeah, I guess you did. You know, I also want to say about our Facebook page, if you want to go to it right now, Alondra is filming this, you know, so we're going to, you know, if you go to the Facebook page, probably starting tomorrow, you'll be able to see kind of what it is that we do when we're in here. And, you know, since this is a special hour show, we've asked the dean of our show, Hank Rubicek, to come join us because there is no one more magical in the world of storytelling than our own Dr. Hank.
And here's your $20 for saying that. Thank you so much, Greg. Actually, we have no idea what we're doing, but we're having a great time. Thank God that Robbie is the maestro of improv.
Well, and let me ask you, right, how do you mix storytelling in your act?
It's really interesting. We have a new routine in the show that's going over, has an effect on people that I didn't even expect. It's about a cancer patient that I worked with. And she passed away a number of years ago, but I got a hold of her family, and they let me use a poem that she wrote in the act. And the poem goes along perfectly with a piece of magic that's happening on stage. I knew it was going to be a powerful piece, and we combine it with an acrobatic piece going on in the background while the story is being told, while the magic's happening. There's an aerial artist in the background. And the thing I was not expecting was half the audience coming up and telling me that it made them cry. And a lot of men, too. Like, I knew it was going to be a strong piece, but I was not expecting that.
The magic of storytelling.
There you go.
Robbie, you know, I really love a show, and I love some of the stuff that you're saying. And one of the things that I really would love to know is, how do you find humor in the face of some of this pain that you've experienced? You know, Mark Twain said, show me someone who knows what's funny, and I'll show you someone who knows what isn't. You're an example of that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the thing is always trying to find comedy in tragedy. And I can give you an example. There was a time when I was sick, and the doctors needed me to take... Sorry, I don't mean to get a little crude, but... they needed me to take a laxative, and my mom, misreading the label, gave me 3 times the dosage. You can imagine the rest on your own. It's one of those times.
I'd rather not.
Yeah, but it's one of those times that it was kind of a tragedy, or a time during an uneasy period, made funnier looking back on it.
But the broccoli time. Wouldn't have done it?
No, not that time. And I hope she's listening to this, too, because that's going to come back and bite her.
Well, go ahead.
Well, it just seems to me that your show is a little different than a lot of magic show, because it's so much more than just tricks.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, you kind of work in so many pieces of showbiz, storytelling, music.
Right. Yeah, so, I mean, the trick is typically designed around what I'm trying to do, whether it's a comedic piece, whether it's a theatrical piece, a storytelling, a poem. I mean, you can pull resources and design what's effectively a special effect around what you're trying to create. You know, when they do Wicked, they don't design the show around, oh, we've got this levitation. I guess she should be a witch. No, it's you design the magic around what you're trying to accomplish. And a lot of it's anecdotal and autobiographical as well.
How do you find a lot of your comedic stuff?
I wish I could tell you. I've got files in my phone. It just comes to me. I apparently have a really messed up muse, is all I can say.
You see an idea and you just think of it.
Pretty much. I mean, it's one of those things where...
Okay, like if I say to you, microphone, what do you think of this funny? People can hear us. That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
The wall. What do you think of the wall?
I mean, I just think of things people can put on a wall. Just going from there.
Like what? Your picture?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, get it signed.
Very good. Very good. Yeah, so just the stuff you see.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just a synopsis of different things, too. Mm-hmm. You know, and one of the things I say, too, you know, looking at it, like a regular 9-to-5 job would never work for me. Because what do? When you go in for a job interview, shake, sit, speak.
Pretty much it.
And if you're lucky, you get to roll over and play dead for the next 30 years, especially if you work in the government. I mean, it's just things like that, these, you know, patterns that you got to pick up on.
And are you these days, you know, when I saw you, I think you were working alone, but it sounds like you're working with others on stage.
So I have a separate show too that I produce called Cirque HOU, and it's really, I realized that Houston has some of the best variety entertainment in the country, and there were very few outlets for them to be seen in a professional context. Whether it's acrobats, ventriloquists, magicians. So I kind of took advantage of that and created this amazing lineup. We just did our third run. We're bringing the show back, I think, in February. That's to be confirmed. But, I mean, really, our goal is to have weekly events somewhere in the city where about half a dozen different performers can be seen.
And let me say, that is one reason why I wanted you on tonight. Because one thing I love about storytelling and that I love about magic is the good ones are doing it the same way they did it hundreds of years ago.
Yep.
And I think there is something timeless about storytelling. There is something timeless about magic. And I don't think I'm alone when I say I'm not interested in seeing David Copperfield make a 747 disappear. But, you know, if you can make someone levitate on stage and do the ring around them, that's not much different than what, you know, they were doing 100 years ago. You bring your own style to it.
Yeah,
I'm not saying that. But there is something timeless about it, just as there is with storytelling, as Dr. Hank always tells us.
Well, and what's amazing, too, is that people don't realize that in magic there's only 10 effects that you can do.
Really?
There are only 10 effects that you can do in magic.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Levitation, transposition, yada, yada, yada. There's only 10, and you can just do them different ways. And there's actually an old adage, too, that if you want old ideas, read new books. If you want new ideas, read old books. And I think I'm ahead of the game because I don't think people really read too much anymore.
People don't read at all.
Yeah.
Trust me, they don't read at all. They really don't. They don't read at all.
As a professor, I guess you see that.
Well, you know, I took my son, years ago when he last wrote a book, I took him to a bookstore in the summer and it said summer reading. And I said, you can pick out any book that you want. You can imagine how excited he was. And he saw these books and he says, Dad, all of these authors are dead. I said, I know. No one can write in current life.
Right.
Right. That's true. Yeah, people just don't read.
I think that is strange when it comes to book that people are so interested in the newest and latest. I'm like, hey, guys, there's like thousands and thousands of amazing books that have been around.
Another problem. People can't read, you see, even if they had a book.
I mean, I'm pretty sure if you text Dickens to them, they would be able to pick up on it. Throw in a few emojis,
right,
they'd get it.
Absolutely.
Do you teach kids magic?
Yes, occasionally. Yeah, I mean it's great too because I mean,
can you make some of them disappear?
If they have an active passport, yes.
I'd pay you for some.
Yeah. College age?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
College age. Yeah. Nah, they're great. Nicole's one of my students over there.
Oh, got her out late tonight.
I know. You know, it's amazing. These actually, I'm out late. When you're old, this is awfully late. Awfully late. Yeah, she's a youngin'.
You guys caught me on a good night. I had a corporate event last night. Tomorrow I've got to go to Louisiana for a show. So you're keeping me up late before a trip.
Well, how is that? How is that, living kind of on the road? I mean,
I've cut out a lot of it.
I remember for a time it seemed like you were never in Houston.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, for a time it was, you know, one or two cities every week minimum. But, you know, Houston is such a hub of, you know, corporate activity that if I want to book shows here, this is the place to be. I mean, we got the George R. Brown, NRG, all the hotels. There's always something going on. And I'm really amazed, too, you know, having performed and seen the last, you know, 8 years, how well Houston has sort of held up during different, you know, economic storms, if you want to put it that way.
Well, I think that's the lesson we learned in the early 80s when we were strictly an oil city.
Right.
We didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's funny. Houston's also an entertainment capital. What most people don't realize, you probably do, is that New York City has 18,500 theater seats, which is impressive. But Houston has 22,000 theater seats, which most of which are booked every single night of the week.
Now, one of the really great things about taking Scooter's slots is that we have a very interesting client base out there.
Oh,
we've got we have a great question from Ellen. And Ellen wants to know, what kind of humor do you find in marriage? In other words, are there any magic tricks to make your spouse go away?
Oh, no.
Ellen, I love that.
Ellen,
yeah, you know,
Ellen, what's funny is that is my wife's name.
Oh, my God. You talk
you
about
it. You nailed it, Ellen.
That's
we came back from our honeymoon.
That's pretty scary, Ellen, I'll tell you.
We came back from our honeymoon, and I had a show like 4 days later. Mm-hmm. And it was actually something that I did on the honeymoon. We were, you know, laying in bed, I'll just say, watching TV.
Okay, late night hours here. Put the kids to bed, folks.
Watching TV, as you do on your honeymoon. And she sees me playing with my ring, which she hadn't, I mean, I hadn't gotten used to it. She hated it. She thought I was going to drop it, lose it. And next thing she knows, I take my ring off and I throw it across the room. She hears it clink on the floor, looks over at me with her jaw open. I've got my ring on my finger and go, man, that just cost me 5 pesos. I had literally waited with a 5 peso coin in the bed to pretend to throw it in place of my ring.
I can only
freak her out. Oh, no, don't worry. When we got back 4 days later after the honeymoon, I was doing it on stage.
You want to hear something really weird? This is really, really weird. This is the weirdest thing any of you will hear all year. Get ready for it. It just occurred to me that people who invented the zipper is probably called Lord of the Flies. It just occurred to me.
Oh.
Is that right? No, it just occurred to me. In any event, I really like this question from Ellen. This is a great question. Making your spouse disappear. I can't tell you how many times I've gotten that question.
Yeah. I mean, what's funny is...
Ellen, why are you asking that? That's what I want to know. Why is she
Does she work with you at all?
No. Funny enough, she now works at Texas Children's Hospital.
Really?
With a lot of the people that I've known for years.
Does that have anything to do with how y'all met?
No. We actually went to high school together, and she wouldn't stop coming to my shows. So I gave in. You know, it seemed like the safest thing to do with a stalker.
To get serious for just a moment, not that any of this is not serious, but just to get serious for a moment. No, we're almost out of time. One of my favorite books was written by a young man who passed away before he finished the book, and the book was entitled The Jester Has Lost Its Jingle. It's a book that I read many years ago, written by a young man named Mark Saltzman, and they sell it at the MD Anderson store here at Uptown Park at the Children's.
Yeah.
It's a story that really reminded me of some of the really wonderful things that Robbie was talking about tonight. It's in poetic form, and it is the jester in medieval times is getting up in the morning with his sick friend Farley trying to make a very serious world laugh, because if not, he was going to be fired by the king. And as he enters this world, he enters a contemporary world. So, for example, he goes from medieval times to the current world of, say, a children's hospital. And he'll turn to a little girl and he'll ask, little girl, why are you not smiling? And she'll respond, how can I be smiling? I'm suffering from a brain tumor. There is no sense of humor. That sounds terrible, but the entire book deals with these poetic devices to help people understand that in order to find humor in the eyes of grave danger, death even, is a real gift. And thank goodness you never experience it to that intensity, but some of the really wonderful, poignant points that you mentioned earlier reminded me of that. It just reminded me of how you have to really find humor in the most intense and profound situations.
Absolutely. And I think that's another thing that moves me about Robbie's work, because I've spent a tremendous amount of time in the hospital myself and with children I love. And if you can come in for 30 minutes and transport them out of that hospital, out of what they're going through, out of what they may be facing tomorrow, if you can help their parents escape that, then I think you're doing a world of good. And the fact that you're talented and funny, that just makes it all the more special.
Thank you.
Thanks for making me part of this. I appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Thank you for coming in.
And I'm just pleased that we had the time to play the seance and to talk about our old friend Bob Blau. And I hope Bob and Harry Houdini are watching us tonight. As we sign off, y'all let me know if you see either of them appear. I'd like to thank magician, comedian, storyteller Robbie Bennett for sharing his stories with us tonight.
And Ellen for her question.
So make 90.1 a part of every day. And while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just taking a well-deserved break from the weight of the day, join us every Thursday at 10 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And ease into your weekend right. If you keep loving a great story, we will keep bringing them to you. And be good to each other. I'm Greg Audell. And along with the fabulous team on So What's Your Story, we're asking you to remember that it's never too late to live happily ever after.
Great.
Peace.
The Houston Peace and Justice Center invites you to its annual Peacemaker Awards Dinner and Celebration on Saturday, November 12th at the University of Houston Hilton Hotel. Our National Peacemaker Awardee and keynote speaker is Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Sonia Nazario, author of bestseller Enrique's Journey, a true story about a young Honduran boy's search for his mother who left home to find work in the U.S. to pay for food for her starving family. Help us celebrate the work of Nazario and also our local peacemakers. Local peacemakers.